You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Thursday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening, for subscribing, and to those who support us on Patreon. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here as always with David Ramil. The trade deadline is over, and we're going to break down what the Heat did and didn't do, other deals that happened that could impact them, and then look forward to what's next. But after the Heat traded Tyler Johnson and Wayne Ellington to the Phoenix Suns for Ryan Anderson yesterday, the Heat didn't make any more moves on deadline day. We heard rumblings that they could have shopped Roddy Magruder, Goran Dragic, etc., but nothing happened. So even after the moves, the Heat are still a luxury tax team. David, your thoughts on the Heat's idle trade deadline day?
Well, I don't think the Heat weren't able to make any moves for lack of trying. From everything we'd heard, they'd been active and engaged in trying to, you know, make a deal with everyone, you know, possible. I think Pat Riley, you know, obviously has a number of connections around the league. I think there were offers there that maybe they didn't feel quite comfortable with. But moreover, I think it kind of reflects on how Miami, what their status is as far as the league is concerned. Like, it's not to say that their players aren't good or that their players don't have value. It's that we might be overvaluing what these players rank as far as assets are concerned. And that's troublesome. You know, it's difficult to kind of assess your roster. I think as fans and our listeners are as fans kind of tend to overvalue what our players are, even as we see all their weaknesses much more closely than other people from around the country. Like, you know, one of the trades that we'll talk about later, the Toronto Raptors moving Jonas Valanciunas, I've never seen such an uproar over a player that, from my perspective, seems pretty limited. I know that he adds value to what they do in Toronto, but for the most part, I would have assumed that he wasn't as highly valued as the Raptors fans are claiming he is. So I think that kind of shows, and you know, you can see this with the Lakers, you see this all around now with trade talk mounting over the last few weeks. There's been no shortage of overvaluing players on a team that you follow. And I think that's the case here. We might be looking at Roddy Magruder and thinking, well, hell, we can get a first-round pick for him. And somebody else is saying, well, maybe we'll get you a second-round pick, a protected second-round pick some year in 2023 or something like that. And I think that's the reality of where Miami is right now, is that maybe they're not clearly assessing players. Maybe even when these contracts were first doled out a couple years ago, you know, one of the things that we heard Pat Riley say was that a lot of these contracts were movable. Maybe they were projecting that these players would continue to develop and that, you know, these players had value in that sense, and that's clearly not been the case. Now, I don't know whether or not they were trying to acquire a superstar. I don't know if a superstar was available. I am sure that they were probably fielding or taking calls or making calls about Bradley Beal's availability because he seems like a guy who's a perfect fit for Miami. But at the same time, I'm just not sure that Miami had anything that Washington considered of value, to be honest with you. So it's kind of scary, but I think it's a realistic assessment of where our team is. And maybe for Miami's front office, it's sort of a wake-up call to say, you know what, we kind of made mistakes a couple of years ago in giving out these highly priced contracts to players that probably didn't earn it.
I think you're exactly right, and I'm glad you bring up Riley's comment from a couple of years ago where he keeps saying, these are movable contracts, and that was kind of like he laid out the plan right there. Let's sign these guys to long-term deals. I don't want to rebuild the team every summer through free agency. I'd rather just get these guys on four-year contracts and just ride this out. And then if a star becomes available, we're in position to go make a trade and stack up some salaries to go get that player. He was wrong. He was flat out wrong. And that nothing proves that more than the last few months where stars have been moved and the Heat haven't really been involved. And they couldn't, and now they're trying to get off of these contracts instead of trying to stack them up for a star. They just want to get rid of them completely, and they can't do that. And I think you look around the league at the trades that happened on the deadline. We kind of looked at teams like Houston and Philadelphia as contenders who could take a flyer on maybe a James Johnson or a Roddy Magruder or these other players that the Heat might try to get rid of. But Houston was able to acquire wings that were on expiring contracts like Iman Shumpert. And I don't think, I think the Heat have players that are better than Iman Shumpert, but I think for the Rockets, Shumpert is an expiring contract. He can help them in a couple different spots. And so they opted to go that way as opposed to tying up their cap space in the future. We saw Philadelphia do the same thing. They actually traded for James Ennis from Houston after Houston made the Shumpert deal. James Ennis is an expiring contract on a very an almost minimum deal. So I think teams just, whether or not they can use the cap space or not, they still view the cap space as valuable. They still need that. They still rely on cap flexibility. And that is maybe the biggest asset in the league right now, more so than first round picks or, you know, even star players at this point, is just the flexibility to go get those guys. Right. And the Heat just don't have that. And they're having a hard time getting there. Now, I should mention that for the luxury tax concern, that seems to be where their primary motivation was. And we speculated that after the Tyler Johnson trade, the Heat were still about $1.2 million over the luxury tax. Trading Rodney Magruder and taking very little, like no salary back, would basically get them under the tax. I don't know if they had another deal lined up. I don't know if some of these other trades that happened kind of blew up on any other deals that they may have had lined up or thought they had lined up, but they didn't get there. They are still a luxury tax team. So even in that sense, David, they kind of failed. And so I don't know that it was necessarily a great trade deadline. For the team, we actually put out a Twitter poll a few minutes ago to our Twitter followers over at Locked On Heat. Grade the trade deadline for the Heat from an A to an F. 1% of fans gave the Heat's trade deadline an A, which I'm actually surprised it's that high. 24% gave it a B, 39% gave it a C, 36% gave it a D or an F. I think I'm right around there. I think I'm kind of like maybe like a C minus, a D plus. You were able to at least move Tyler Johnson, Wayne Ellington, relieves the logjam at guard there. Ryan Anderson's not a big piece coming back as far as somebody who can contribute on the floor, but it's kind of what you're forced to take back if you're Miami. Somebody actually tweeted at me, this is a bad trade. Ryan Anderson can't do anything. And I was like, yeah, you're right. You know, the Heat should have just traded Tyler Johnson for Anthony Davis. That would have been way better. Turns out that that's not an option for Miami. But where would you have fallen on the scale of grades?
Probably similarly. Look, I think clearing the logjam was great. You know, as you pointed out, if it's a salary cap move, it failed pretty badly because I don't think Ryan is a functional player in the Heat system. And at least you were getting value out of both Tyler Johnson and Wayne Ellington. You know, maybe that was limited. Maybe it was on irregular nights. And maybe, you know, especially in Ellington's case, he wasn't really playing much of late. So, you know, that kind of changes the way that you look at those players in the move itself. But, you know, you were still getting something out of them on occasion. Anderson isn't going to provide that. So, I mean, I might be closer to a D, maybe even an F, to be honest with you.
Yeah, because you make an interesting point there, right? Because, yeah, you clear the logjam. So you're hoping for an addition by subtraction, right? But overall, you're kind of paying the same amount of money to a guy who is significantly worse than Tyler Johnson.
He's going to sit there on the bench, and he's not going to contribute.
Yeah, and I think I saw somewhere people speculating that he could be a buyout candidate. I think that he will wait at least until the summer. I don't see them buying him out because they'd still have to pay him through.
Sorry to interrupt you. I just thought about this. Is he going to fill like a Luke Babbitt role? Could he start and play like 10 minutes?
I kind of theoretically put that out there. Like, okay. He does have the skill set, again, theoretically, to play Luke next Babbitt? To Hassan Whiteside. Yeah, I mean, he spaces the floor, but then again, like, this is why I brought up Nikola Mirotic as a possible trade target a couple weeks ago, but Mirotic is actually an underrated defender and can move, you know, with his body around the perimeter and, like, get in front of guys. Ryan Anderson has a really hard time staying in front of guys, so overall, I think his defense is too much of a minus, but the Heat will try him. He's not never going to play. The Heat are going to throw him out there and say, all right, let's see what he's got. Maybe this is a better situation than what it was in Phoenix, and hopefully maybe we just like get a more improved version of Ryan Anderson. Like, they'll try him. We'll see Ryan Anderson. I just don't want to expect too much. All right, let's take this next question from Billy about the Heat's guard rotation. Let's do that after this break. Two guards down, still a bunch of guards on the team. Billy writes in, Tyler's been shipped out to the Suns. Who gets his minutes? What does this do for the dynamic of the guard rotation? David, where do you think the Heat go from here? Because Tyler Johnson was starting. They need to have a new starting guard.
I don't know where Spoelstra's head is at right now. I imagine, if I had to guess, that we would see Magruder starting. I guess kind of like, I think the having passed the trade deadline, that's kind of a show of faith, and maybe they're hoping he can rebuild some of his value. and contribute to the team the way he did earlier in the season. So, if anything, I think he's more complimentary than Dion, and I think they like Dion coming off the bench for the spark that he provides offensively. So, at the very least, until Goran Dragic comes back fully healthy, I think Magruder starts.
Yeah, and I've seen it out there like, oh, hey, you trade Tyler, you trade Wayne, now you're down to kind of a tidy nine-man rotation. I don't think that that's going to be the case because that nine-man rotation doesn't include Ronnie Magruder, who's basically been out of the rotation for the last several weeks. I do see that I think Ronnie Magruder ends up going back into the starting lineup. I think that's the only logical move here. Dragic, as you mentioned, still not back yet from his knee scope. You can't put Waiters in that starting unit. You just can't. You can't put Waiters there next to Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow and basically threatening to take the ball out of their hands. It just, that would be a disaster. Right. And so I don't know what the other option is. Dwayne Wade, but you have him on a minutes restriction. You gotta keep bringing D-Wade off the bench. I don't think you start him. So I think it's Rodney Magruder for now. I think that if you're the Heat, it could be worse. Magruder played well at the beginning of the season. He did not play well, basically, after the turn of the new year, but maybe you can kind of, you know, spend some time on the bench, kind of, you know, we saw how even last year from that piece from Michael Pina for Vice Sports, who wrote about how Magruder really benefited from being on the bench last year and with his injury and kind of viewing the team from afar and seeing where he can contribute. Maybe something like that happened in a smaller dose in January. I don't know, but that's really the only option there. And then you just basically maintain that bench unit of Dion, Dwayne Wade, Bam, and James Johnson now, if Kelly Olynyk is indeed the starter going forward. So, but then once Dragic comes back, you could take Magruder out, put Dragic in that spot, and then Magruder just goes back to the bench. But I do think that there's some value going forward. Now that the Heat haven't traded Rodney Magruder, they have his rights this summer when he becomes a restricted free agent. I do think that there's value in playing Magruder down the stretch and going with a 10-man rotation, which we think Spo is pretty comfortable with anyway, going with a 10-man rotation and just seeing what you can get from Rodney, because you really need to decide what you're going to do with him. The other part of this with the trade, David, is that the Heat basically they don't save much money this year. Well, they do a little bit with the getting Wayne Ellington off the books, but they'll also save about $5 million over the summer. That gives them a little bit more cushion before they have to hit the luxury tax. They could have created a little bit of space here to re-sign Rodney Magruder, depending on if they make a couple other tweaks over the summer, which we expect them to try to do. Yeah. So Rodney Magruder isn't out of Miami for sure. Like, the Heat could still value.
Which I think that's what they wanted, right?
Yeah. I mean, maybe there was a trade out there for some conditional second-round pick for Rodney Magruder, and the Heat were just like, we'd rather just pay the tax and keep Rodney because we actually value him as a player.
I mean, look, that's Miami's MO, and it has been for years. I mean, guys that they develop that work hard, like Wayne Ellington, they get rewarded. And I mean, for better or for worse, maybe they get rewarded too much. And I think that'll be an interesting test here. You know, look, the fact that they were willing to move out Ellington and not keep him on the roster and risk an overpay, one they couldn't afford at this point. But anyway, you know, that they were willing to move him, and as far as Magruder is concerned, similarly, I mean, I think it's an interesting gauge of where the Miami's front office is, that maybe they've learned their lesson. No more four-year contracts, no more overvaluing these players just because they reached a new level in Miami. That's, you know, maybe that's because you have to give them a carrot at the end of the stick. If you've already given them $40 million worth of carrots, they're not going to keep working for anything.
So a couple other big trades in the Eastern Conference that happened. The 76ers got Tobias Harris. They shipped off a couple of first-round picks, including Miami's unprotected 2021 pick, which, David, that's becoming the new Brooklyn pick, and that does not make me feel good. But the 76ers get Tobias Harris, adding to Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid. That's an interesting core four that they have. And then the Milwaukee Bucks on trade deadline day stole Nikola Mirotic from the New Orleans Pelicans. And then the Toronto Raptors came in with just, you know, about an hour left before the deadline and got Marcus Saul from the Memphis Grizzlies. So an arms race in the Eastern Conference. The Sixers, Bucks, Raptors all presumably get better. But who do you think out of that group is, and let's throw the Celtics in there too, because they're right there in the top four of the East. Who's the top team in the East in your mind after trade deadline?
I think the Bucks did a really good job of adding key pieces there. Like, as much as Tobias might be questionably the best player that was moved around, they're still too top heavy and didn't add necessarily enough depth. And they're counting on this buyout market, and that might not necessarily work out. I'm not sure why it wouldn't, But, you know, Ellington's a possibility to join Philadelphia, but he's also a possibility to join the Lakers or Oklahoma City or other teams. So we already saw that Wes Matthews is a guy who's getting bought out, and he's going to be going to Indiana probably. So, you know, as far as what Milwaukee is, they're already really good, and they just added some more key depth there. And, I mean, I just like the fact that they're able to keep shoring up that lineup that's already so potent and doesn't cause any kind of, like, Mirotić, as good an offensive player as he is, as good a floor spacer as he is, you pointed out, his defense isn't as bad as people presume it might be, and so he continues to contribute at that high level. And you're already top-heavy with Giannis. You know, maybe not a superstar-led team in the sense that obviously Giannis is at the top. It's not a big three like, you know, in Cleveland or Miami or Boston. But at the same time, you know, it's still pretty good at the top and just a lot of depth. You know, I don't know if that's necessarily the best. I don't know if they're necessarily the most powerful team, but I can't overlook how good they are right now and how solid their depth is. I wonder if they're going to have problems in the playoffs when depth isn't necessarily as big an issue. But for now, I would say it's Milwaukee.
And I would keep looking at Milwaukee for these buyout markets. They could use a more traditional center when, you know, in the case that they have to play Toronto with Marc Gasol now or Joel Embiid and the Sixers in the playoffs, or even Boston, who can kind of go more traditional with an Al Horford and Aaron Baines look in the front court. I wouldn't be surprised. Like the Bucks, their MO with Mike Budenholzer now is basically to try to play those guys off the floor by putting Brook Lopez at center. And now you have with Mirotić there, and man, he's really good. Mirotić is really good, man. Like, and people started to see that last year in the playoffs. He was a big reason why the Pelicans were able to sweep the Portland Trailblazers in that first round. Everybody keeps looking at Rajon Rondo and Jrue Holiday. Mirotić had a great series for them and was really, really good for them after Boogie went down for the final stretch of the season to get them into the postseason in the first place. He's really good, and the Bucks got a huge upgrade there. He'll play that Ersan Ilyasova spot better than Ersan Ilyasova could ever dream of. And so there are ways to play Mirotić with Giannis as your front court, Giannis basically being your center. And that's scary. That's super scary if you're another team in the East. But again, I could see them in the buyout maybe going for a backup center who can just sort of come off the bench, a Robin Lopez or something like that. Ooh. Would be a really nice fit there. Nice. Martin Gortat could be available as well. So I agree with you, actually. I think the Bucks the dominance of Giannis is just is so otherworldly that they're already the best team in the East. I don't love the Tobias Harris fit in Philadelphia, and I like Tobias Harris a lot as a player. Yeah. I just hate that trade up and down for the 76ers. I think that they kind of screwed the pooch on their whole championship window with that move, but we'll see. The Raptors, I really like Marc Gasol for that team. You move Valanciunas, so you're moving out a big body that could, again, go against the Joel Embiids of the world. But Gasol could do that too. And then with Gasol, if he starts in place of Serge Ibaka, what he gives you that Ibaka doesn't give you, he could still shoot threes like Ibaka, probably better than Ibaka at this point.
Yeah.
And he's a way better passer than Ibaka. Like the knock on Serge Ibaka is that he doesn't really move the ball. He's not, you know, he's not an eyes open kind of passer. Marc Gasol is definitely a great passer. And so now all of a sudden you can run offense through him, and that just makes the entire team better. I love the Marc Gasol addition for Toronto. I just, at the end of the day, I'm still going with the Bucks because I think what Gasol gives you and what Mirotić gives you, as far as their fits on their new respective teams, are about equal. And Milwaukee was already better than Toronto before the trade deadline, so I'll go with Milwaukee.
That's fair. I mean, I think Kupo is the best player in the East too, so I think even better than Kawhi or anybody else. So
it's close. It's really close. I mean, the funny part about the East is that LeBron left, and all of a sudden these teams, you know, there was an arms race over the summer, right? The Bucks fired their coach, got Mike Budenholzer, went out, got Brook Lopez, made a bunch of moves, kind of redid their roster. Toronto, obviously, getting Kawhi. Boston made their moves to better position themselves. And then obviously Philadelphia with Jimmy Butler. Like, LeBron leaves the East, and all of a sudden everybody's just loading up. And now it's a pretty clear top four in the Eastern Conference. It's going to be a fascinating playoffs. And, you know, this kind of impacts Miami, too, because if you're looking around, and you're like, wow, we weren't nearly as good as these teams before, and now we're, like, super not as good as these teams now. Like, these teams are far and away. Like, you look at, I don't love the move for Philadelphia, but they've got four guys who are head over heels better than anybody the Heat have now.
Well, I think it just goes back to how the team is expected to build. You know, one of the things that worked out so well for Miami in its past, ever since Pat Riley has been here in 1995, he made the realization, looking at that roster of guys like Kevin Willis and Glenn Rice and, you know, all their players that weren't really standing out at that point in their respective careers and said, you know what, this isn't going to work. I need somebody who's going to be a superstar to build around. And in that particular time in NBA history, he wanted a center. He acquired Alonzo Mourning, who had, he sensed the market. He knew Mourning had expressed frustration with the Charlotte Hornets that they weren't going to pay him the kind of money he wanted. And he went and scooped them up for Glenn Rice, Matt Geiger, and others. The point is, he had a superstar there. And then in 2003, he got his superstar. When they were facing that same issue, he got Dwayne Wade. He got lucky with Wade. We all did. And then he was able to turn good roster pieces, you know, Lamar Odom, Ryan Grant, etc., Caron Butler, into Shaquille O'Neal. That superstar doesn't exist there, but I think that's what they were looking at. They were hoping that Winslow or Richardson or somebody on this roster would take a star leap. If Dion Waiters had stayed healthy, let's just say for craps and giggles, if he had stayed healthy, scored 25 points per game last season, would he have been the kind of star that maybe could have attracted other players to join him in Miami? Probably not.
Probably not.
But either way, maybe that's what they were hoping. They were hoping for internal development, for enough guys to kind of stand out and say, you know what, I don't mind being the guy who comes here. I'll be happy to accept a trade to this place. For Jimmy Butler, he would have loved to have come to Miami. Why? Because he would have been the unquestioned alpha there, and he would have been the guy who would have led everybody else, and he would have been fine with it. They had enough role players to back him up and to help him in his pursuit of a title.
And Jimmy Butler is a wacko, right? Because he likes like the hard work, winning mentality, basketball's the only thing that matters kind of thing, or at least he kind of puts it out there that he is that. And I think Dwayne Wade was in his ear a little bit of like, no, dude, like put Miami on your list, like you would like it here, whatever. But the Heat kind of got to get lucky again. You mentioned they got lucky with Dwayne Wade, and that's fair, right? The draft is very much a crapshoot. You got to get lucky. I mean, they didn't take Darko. That's nice, but they got to get lucky again. Like they've got to get lucky again, and it might just be some star saying, "I want to go make a difference in South Beach." Maybe that's all it is, despite there not being the Dwayne Wade recruiting chip this year. Maybe they get lucky in the draft this year and they're able to find somebody at the end of the lottery or in the middle of the first round that can just sort of create a different ceiling for them, like the Bucks did with Giannis. I mean, they are just going to have to get lucky. The unfortunate part for Miami is that they don't really have the... like. If you want to get lucky, you got to roll the dice a bunch of times, and the Heat have a very limited amount of dice rolls. Like, they've got the pick this year. They've got the pick the year after that. Their 2021 pick is owed now to wherever, to the Clippers. So they've got some first-round picks. They don't have really any second-round picks. They don't really have an option to buy low on a guy and hope that he kind of becomes a superstar player because they don't really have that much cap space for a couple of years. So they just don't have that many rolls of the dice, and that's the unfortunate part. But let's talk about what the Heat do now after this break. What's up, Heat fans? We've got a special announcement. We're going to be giving away a D-Wade World Tour t-shirt to a lucky fan. All you have to do is leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnHeat, and then take a screenshot of both and email that to LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Once we get to 150 iTunes reviews and 1,500 followers on Twitter, we'll randomly select someone to send a D-Wade World Tour t-shirt to. You get to decide the style and the size, and we'll send it to you as a thank you for your support. Again, all you have to do is leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at LockedOnHeat, and then send that screenshot over to us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Once we get to 150 and 1,500, we'll cut off submissions, so do it now. A D-Wade World Tour t-shirt could be yours for free. All right, David, so now that we have some clarity at where the Heat are and what their roster is going to basically look like between now and July, right, we can sort of plan for the future a little bit easier. One thing, we already talked about Rodney Magruder. We talked about Magruder in the past as, okay, the Heat aren't going to have the cap space to bring him back. That may still be the case, but they do have a little bit more of a cushion, a little bit more wiggle room if they can make a couple more changes to possibly bring Magruder back. So that could be in the cards later on. The other thing is the Heat weren't able to get off some of these more long-term contracts. If we believe that they wanted to get off of them, that's going to have to wait until the summer. The Heat also have their draft pick that they didn't move at the trade deadline, and I think I was definitely a little nervous that they would try to put that first-round pick and use that as sweetener to get off of one of these long-term contracts. They didn't, and so they will, I think, at least be picking in the draft. They can always take that player that they pick in the draft and move that in a deal for whatever it might be. But that's kind of where the Heat are now. But I want to talk about Goran Dragic, too, because there was a little scuttle that maybe the Heat were talking about moving Dragic. They didn't. And he's got a player option for this summer of a little bit more than $19 million. What did the Heat do with Dragic now? Because it's hard to move a guy, whether he opts in or opts out. He's not going to opt out unless the Heat are able to talk with him and maybe finagle a long-term contract with less money. And I actually think that's probably where this might go. What do you think?
Well, I thought so, too. I mean, I think I proposed that a couple of months ago that as a potential option for him, that the relationship with the team seemed strong enough at that point where he could have negotiated a buyout, or not a buyout, but he would have negotiated a deal in place, opted out of his contract, and gotten that long-term deal. But I think now, given his age, given everything else, I mean, yeah, I mean, maybe he'd get more money on the back end, but at the same time, maybe he'd rather collect it up front, not know what happens the year after this. You know, they've shown a willingness to move him, potentially, from everything we've heard. And if that's the case, he might not feel like he trusts his franchise enough to kind of negotiate a long-term deal with him. You know, the other option then is if they do negotiate that longer-term deal for less money per year, then he does become one of those more movable contracts. But even then, at his age, do you still want to take three additional years of Goran Dragic?
What would be a movable annual salary for Goran Dragic given where he's at right now in his career? Like $10, $11 million a year?
Probably less.
Yeah.
I don't think you want 33-year-old Goran Dragic at $10 million or $12 million per year. I would say it's probably eight.
And he would have to basically get 4 years at $8 million. Yeah, it would be. And I don't see that.
Another $40 million, but spread out over 5 years. That would be, you know, that's something. But he would finish his career here, potentially.
And if we believe that the Heat are kind of circling the summer of 2020 for flexibility, which they are based on their cap sheet. And again, I've said this up and down the street. I'm just yelling it at people at this point. The summer of 2020 is almost irrelevant because there's no good free agents available. It's the summer of 2021 that really matters. Mm-hmm. But if the Heat are still trying to make sure they have cap space going that way and at least want to be flexible in 2020 to maybe add a difference maker or just shake things up for the sake of shaking things up, then they probably want Dragic to opt in and then just take the one more year and just say, all right, that's it, and then wipe your hands of Dragic's contract and move on to whatever the next stage of the Miami Heat is. And we both assume that it probably doesn't involve Goran Dragic, unless, of course, he's on the books for $7 or $8 million bucks a year. Then I think the Heat would be like, all right, sounds worth it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of where else to go with this because it's pretty clear that this next summer they're still going to have holes. I think that fifth spot in the starting lineup, wherever that third perimeter spot, I should say, between Winslow and Richardson, previously taken up by Tyler Johnson, could be Dragic going forward for most of the rest of this season in the playoffs if they make it. But that's kind of the spot, if you're the Heat, that I think you've got to be targeting. You could sort of mix and match Olynyk and James Johnson at that forward spot next to Hassan Whiteside. We didn't even talk about Hassan Whiteside yet. He's got a player option of $27 million. He's definitely taking that. He's opting in. Maybe Whiteside's movable this summer too. I don't know. But basically, right now, as it stands, they're still $27.5 million over the salary cap, and they have a little bit less than $5 million over the luxury tax. But if they can convince, maybe that's a reason why Dragic would opt out and take a lesser deal if Miami is just trying to gain cap space for this summer, or not even cap space at this point. It would just be to get under the tax. They could do that by negotiating a long-term deal for Dragic for about $5 million less than what he makes now, which would still be a home run if you're Dragic at $14 million a year. They'll probably waive Ryan Anderson over the summer and save that $5 million. That's what probably we expect from here. Derek Jones Jr., his deal is non-guaranteed for next season. We figure he'll still be on the roster for that $1.6 million, which is a nice bargain for the Heat. So it's basically it's the NBA draft is the way it's sort of the route that they have to improving this roster this summer or by some other crazy trade. But as we just saw from this trade deadline, David, I don't know that we're not stacking players to get a star probably. And I don't see necessarily a crazy trade going forward unless Whiteside's trade value changes drastically.
And that's a potential option, you know? I mean, there's 30-some games left for the Heat to prove that maybe they have a clearer identity. I mean, I don't expect a 30-11 type run to the playoffs. But
yeah,
this trade deadline, or maybe the fact that now everybody's on this roster and realizes, you know, that a deadline has passed, maybe that's enough to kind of inspire them. Maybe they'll congeal. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they'll turn into a better, more cohesive unit. Who knows? Maybe we'll finally start to see the version that Eric Spoelstra thought we would at the start of the season. You know, a group of deep, talented players that could take it to another level. And if that's the
case, getting our listeners' hopes up, David. I mean,
well, it's an option, right? At this time, they could suck. They could.
It is an alternate universe that's out there. Yeah.
But if they do improve and they do get better, and these players do take another leap, even if it's just a 30-game sample size, to build off, maybe that increases their value. Maybe they could package a player together with that pick and acquire a superstar. I think, look, there were enough moves over the last few weeks, the last few days, to kind of show that you never know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe Donovan Mitchell hates Utah. Maybe he wants to get traded out of there. Well, who knows? You know,
this whole segment, you're just getting all of our hopes up right now. What if Kevin Durant becomes less petty and just says, you know what, I want to live in Miami for the rest of my life?
No, he's done to New York. Come on, that's a done deal.
Some immediate things that we should talk about: the buyout market. Again, the Heat have 2 weeks to fill. That they have to. They have 13 players on the roster. They have to sign somebody to this 14th roster spot. I think they max out at 14 like they have all season. But because they traded two players for one in the Phoenix deal, they have to fill that. They have 2 weeks to fill that additional roster spot under league rules. We talk about buyout candidates. You kind of scoffed as soon as I said buyout. They're not going to be really in the running for any of these guys, I don't think, because most of the guys that move the needle tend to move the needle for contenders at this point. The Heat are not that at this point. I don't know if there's a lesser player out there that the Heat, like Michael Beasley, like, I don't know, Greg Monroe, J.R. Smith.
I will say Enes Kanter is a good option.
I think it sounds like he can make a difference for a contender. Like, we're hearing already rumblings that the Celtics are looking at him.
Oof.
So I don't of all the buyout guys that we've been seeing on Twitter and stuff like that as rumors, I just don't see it happening. It'll be interesting to see though what the Heat do with this 14th spot, right? Because they have a couple options. They could go after a guy. Like, there's a lot of guys who could get bought out, so there's only so many landing spots. So they could
I'm thinking it's going to be like the attitude that Wes Matthews took. Like, the Pacers aren't going to win. They're not contenders. It's an opportunity for him to get playing time. And we've seen that before. I mean, we saw that with Joe Johnson. You know, at that point in time, I think he saw Miami as a contender, but he also saw Miami as a contender that could give him playing time. So that is a value.
So at which point, are we talking about maybe like a Derrick Jones Jr. replacement for the balance of the season?
Somebody who could see themselves filling in at the 3 or 4, which is kind of, I mean, Kanter is probably more suited for the center position. But yeah. I mean, I thought that maybe if he's not going to join a contender, or he's not going to go to Oklahoma City to be with his mustache bro, you know, maybe he might be willing to you know, come to Miami and maybe rebuild his career. He's got really nice scoring touch. He rebounds well, things that the team could use. I don't know.
You've always liked Kanter.
He's a fun guy to talk to. He's interesting. He's a Steve defensively, but other than that, he's fun.
I mean, if you're going to play Kanter, you might as well play Ryan Anderson. I don't know, but it's...
No, because Cantor's like 25, you know.
That's true. Chandler Parsons? That dude, he says he's healthy, but we don't know. It sounds like he might get bought out, yeah, because the Grizzlies weren't able to move him at the deadline, so they might just say...
If so, then yes, I could see that, taking a flyer on a guy like that. But again, I mean, he's... theoretically more mobile Ryan Anderson, but we've also got much more mobile Ryan Anderson and Kelly Olynyk who can pass too. So I don't know.
It's tough because Parsons hasn't played at all for the Grizzlies, which is part of the reason why he might get bought out, because they just don't like each other anymore. But we have no idea what he looks like right now, if he's healthy or not. Right, like healthy Chandler Parsons could really help the Heat, but he hasn't been that in quite a few since basically went to Memphis.
Right.
I have to throw these names out there, David. I have to do it. Carmelo Anthony, Michael Beasley. They fit what they need there. Or not, I'm sorry, that's not true at all. They fit the position that the Heat need as far as a tweener 3-4 guy. But like, hell no, right?
Beasley's not coming to Miami.
There's no way that's happening. Yeah,
he's very unhappy with Spoelstra in the front office.
And I don't think the Heat know better than to make that phone call.
And Carmelo looks like he's almost a done deal to join LeBron in Los Angeles, which is fine.
But I'm still not positive that that happens. I just don't want to believe that the Lakers are that bad. I don't want to believe that a front office could be that dumb to basically move Zubac like they did just to create a roster spot to sign Carmelo Anthony. But then again, none of what the Lakers have done so far since signing LeBron hasn't made any sense.
You bring up a good point, because then again, if we start to think about what player has historically shown a preference for playing time or money or better situation rather than the chance at winning a title, which is absolutely fine, Carmelo kind of fits that perfectly. He stayed with the Knicks for extra money. He could have become a free agent at the same time.
That's what's going to happen. The Heat are going to be like, Melo, we need a new starting power forward.
I'm okay with it.
Whatever at this point, I guess. Sure. You know what? Screw it. Why not? That's all I got. I think the other option we should just mention before we wrap it up here, the Heat do have the two-way guys, Duncan Robinson, Yante Mayton. Mayton has been absolutely explosive for the Skyforce in the G League. Wouldn't surprise me if the Heat just brought one of those guys up. It was around this time last season, David, that they cut ties with Matt Williams, my boy, go Knights,
yes,
and brought in Derek Jones Jr., who I guess worked out. So they've made swaps in their two-way contracts in the past. They could maybe promote Yante or even Duncan Robinson to that, and that player could play for the Heat this season at that tweener 3-4 spot, and then maybe bring another guy from their G League or otherwise onto that newly created second two-way deal. So
this too will also be a test for how Miami views themselves. If they just want a name, let's assume a Carmelo wants to, or another name like Enes Kanter or somebody else in the buyout market wants to come to Miami for some reason. This is a good test for Miami to show where they view themselves. If they want to continue to develop their young players and they'll give their core of Bam and Richardson and Winslow more playing time or more minutes together, then they'll bring in a guy from, the two-way roster spot there and kind of see if they can get somebody out of that, youth movement. But if not, well, then we're looking at Carmelo jacking up 19-footers for the rest of the season.
I think you lost me. I think I just went into a coma. I'd rather them use it on one of those two-way guys. Sure. We've heard nothing but glowing things about both Duncan Robinson and Yante Mayton, and I just think that they both have worked hard enough. Give them the deal. Just give them the 14th spot, fill that other two-way contract, because at the end of the day, the Heat, again, they don't have that many rolls of the dice, but their G League has been a nice funnel for them. It's been a nice way to get talent and add depth to this team.
You can't overlook the front office's desire to put butts in seats, though, and I think Carmelo, even at this point, is still a bigger name than Yante Mayton.
All right. Well, now that we're talking way too much about Carmelo Anthony, I don't want to LeVar ball this thing and speak it into the universe. So that's all we have for today. Thanks for listening. When you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Heat. Connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
Go Mellow.
Wrap it up, B.